Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Podcart's Life is Like a Box of Records podcast. My name is Helena Rafai. Occasionally, we bring in special guests to talk about songs that have soundtracked their lives so far. For rights reasons, music may be shorter than the original song. This week's guest is Layla Josephine, an award-winning poet, a theatre maker from Glasgow. Layla is also recognised in performing and education. Her work has sometimes challenged those that experience it, but in the best ways possible.
Hello, Layla.
Hi.
Introduce yourself for our listeners, please.
Hi, my name is Layla Josephine and I am a poet and theatre maker.
So we have known each other for a few years now.
Yep.
I met you via TYCI.
Yep.
And which was a female collective. But you're regularly kind of doing different things on the creative circuit. So you've picked six songs.
Yeah.
This might expand. Never say never.
Oh, I hope so. It was too hard just to pick six.
Yeah. It's often a really tough thing. That's everyone cannot cope with it.
Yeah.
There's songs that have soundtracked your life so far, and we're going to talk about them and what is going on with you.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to kick into the first song.
Yeah, let's do it. You're desperate to know why I've picked.
I am. Big Shania.
Yeah.
And man, I feel like a woman. So explain to me.
So this isn't even my favourite Shania song. I don't even like this song that much, but it was really important for me to include it because I used to I've always loved performing. And I think first and foremost, whatever I do, I'm a performer. And one time I did an excellent Shania Twain impression because I used to go to a Steiner school and I just moved to this Catholic school in Knightswood, and it was a very different vibe, and there was seven other girls in my class who were all going to do Stars in Their Eyes, but they were already S Club 7, so obviously they didn't have any room for me. So I was I'm just going to do it by myself anyway. And I was practicing for ages in my room and, practicing this Shania routine. And I had a leopard skin top hat, leopard skin gloves, the whole ordeal. And I can't really remember it, but my mum says that it was shocking. The whole thing was just shocking. She was the only emotion I felt when I was watching you on stage was sheer shock. And I was trying to remember about it. And, I was but was it good? And then she was yeah, it was brilliant. I'd never seen anything like it. It was you had a chair and you were twirling the chair around and then you threw it into the audience, on the key change. And apparently it was my dad, my mum, and my babysitter, and their whole face when they were watching was just sheer amazement at this where it had come from, because apparently I'd shown no interest in performing up until that point.
No inhibitions, make no conditions, get a little out of line. I ain't gonna act politically correct, I only wanna have a good time.
And I was tonight, Matthew, I'm going to be Shania Twain. And obviously at that age as well, like, it's kind of weird that you even know who Shania Twain is. But like, my mum used to listen to like quite a lot of country and traditional music, so that it kind of came from that. And but anyway, I didn't place that year. I was didn't come in anywhere at school. There was like two Avril Lavigne's that came first and second. But it was apparently a fix because there was like a sister. I'm not better or anything, but then the following year I came back and did Roxy Hart from Chicago, and everyone wanted to be in my act, but I said no, I didn't want anyone else in it. So and then I won it, and it was great. So
it sounds a bit like Little Miss Sunshine.
I was gonna say that it was like totally my Little Miss Sunshine moment. It was like definitely probably more sexual than it should have been for like a 10-year-old. I mean, if you listen to the song, like how I even understood what the song was about, but it was yeah, I think it was like important because like to pick it, because I think I've always just been a bit too much and a bit like always making a show of myself and always showing off. And you know, as I've become older, when you're younger you don't mind, and then when you become a teenager it's something that you're told to stop being, and I always have tried to resist that. And actually, you know, coming back into it now, I feel like it's something to be proud of. But that was definitely the start of something, that song and that performance. I wish someone had a video of it, honestly, but I don't think anyone does.
I think we all wish that.
Yeah.
So poetry has played a very important part in your life, and that's how we got to know you, was through your poetry performance. You have got a really specific style when you're on stage and so on, and the kind of issues that you write about as well they're very close to the bone, but they're real. When did you write your first poem?
So I was in third year uni. I went to drama school, obviously. And I don't know if that is obvious, actually, but it feels like that was the kind of natural progression when you weren't really good at school but decided you wanted to do something. It was always like that was the only thing I loved doing and the only thing I was ever really good at. And yeah, so I was going through a lot of kind of questioning and a bit of hard time with family stuff, so that's how the writing started. And also I had a broken heart, which is always a good way to start writing poems. And it just kind of like poured out of me. It was something that I needed to do. And at that point I was making a graduation show, so I put it in my final degree show, and then somebody asked me to come do it. Sam Small came and asked me to do it at In Deep, and I was like, oh, it's not poetry, like I can't write, I'm not good, it's not poems, I don't know what they are. And I did it, and it was like, oh, this is a good feeling, I want to keep doing this. And I've kind of fallen in and out of love with it, you know. Sometimes I think with all art forms you sometimes feel like you're terrible and sometimes you feel like you get a new lease of life. But yeah, it's been like 7 years of writing now.
And how do you ever kind of tend to compare yourself to other people and just consistently do you feel that you've kind of become more self-critical as the years have gone on?
Yeah, I think my friend Iona Lee, she's a poet as well, she said something really interesting. She was like, the better you get at poetry, the harder it is to write it, because you start to understand, you know, the craft of it and how difficult it is. And like all my poems that I wrote when I first started writing, they make me cringe so much now. And I like look back and they're all online and it just like drives me mad. But you know, it's good to like still be okay with like how you were in the past, but always trying to like better yourself. And I think I was really lucky to be always offered lots of really good opportunities that allowed me to be like going through professional development all of the time. And reading loads of poetry has totally shifted my mind, but it has become harder. I'm much more cautious about sharing things now. And it's very different. It's a very different process from what it once was.
You have so back to the songs that okay. You've picked, and it's quite a mixed bag.
I mean, none of them are. I needed to pick like, I feel like they're a basic bitch like decision. Like, I feel like they're all just very like middle of the road. But I wanted to make sure that I was like genuinely soundtracking my life rather than doing something that was cool. Because I think I've never been good at being cool, especially when it comes to music. And, you know, I'd say that one of the bands that are not on it that are actually one of my favourite is ABBA. Like, I'm a, like, huge ABBA fan. Every year, me and my friend go to ABBA tributes. We've gone to, like, the South Bank Centre ABBA kind of, like, museum where Jarvis Cocker was, like, introducing it. Like, I am, like, a major ABBA fan. I don't know how they've not made onto it, but they, you know, I always put my, I struggle not to tell the truth, I think. And I think that that in a way is really good, but also in a way it's terrible. So yes, the next song is potentially, they're all just a mixed bag.
Yeah, and it's Jamie T.
Yeah, if you got the money.
Why?
So this is kind of came out when I started going to like festivals. And I was like running around with all my mates, like just started drinking. It feels like anything is possible. And it was just like one of those songs that soundtracked that time. But Jamie T for me, like, I don't know, I feel like I've kind of grown up with him because all his other albums are like a little bit darker, talks a lot about like addictions and partying and lots of stuff. And I feel like him, I feel like I've grown up with him. So this was the kind of music from my teenage years, and like bands like the Arctic Monkeys were really important at that time as well. And it just made you feel like you just wanted to cause a riot wherever you went. You're just like, oh fuck it, like let's just like get on it. But I also think Jamie T's quite interesting in how he like rhymes, because he doesn't necessarily go like in a very straight narrative. He like bounces around and he uses whatever he can, so he'll use like pieces of dialogue, like Sheila's got like loads of dialogue in it and stuff. And actually when I'm writing poems, I do something quite similar and change the pace like a lot of the time. I spend late nights trying to pick up love off the floor where the other brothers leave it be. Oh, it's stuck hard down, it's like chewing gum. While going on the floor, I sing my R.I.P. Cause the songbirds don't do singing on pavements. No sweet melody, the sound of spit. Spat orbit, spoke lost hope. Substitute what you told, man, choke on it. We be near heaven at a quarter to 11. By 3, we are thinking of the love we lost. I kind of feel like that was why I picked this song, because I feel like it was like most kind of like how I write. But I went to see him at the Barrowlands maybe in like 2000 and when I was a bit older, like 2014-15, and it was just such a good gig. It's just like, I don't know, just so nostalgic.
Yeah, so I was gonna say the nostalgia.
Yeah.
And so your teenage years, so you've referenced to kind of a lot of the craziness there. Yeah. What were your teenage years like?
I mean, so I grew up in Jordan Hill, which is like a really kind of middle class constituent area. Like it's not private school, but you have to live in the area to go there. And we would bevy all the time, like every weekend, like staying out all night. And then I started going to festivals, and it was just like this whole world opened up in front of me, and like I just loved it. I just like the idea of meeting all these people and listening to all these bands, and I just like got so into like indie music, and just, I don't know, I just loved the whole thing. And then that's when I started to like go out with people from other schools, and you know, going into like Central Station. And I went through all the phases as well. Like I was in emo for a while, and then I was like going to Cube, which was like this like unders on Queen Street. And so I did a bit of like R&B for a while. I just loved where the party was at, so I would just go wherever that was. But yeah, I have really fond memories of being a teenager. And it, like, also like that time was so funny and cringe now, because it was when Skins were coming out. So many of us were like influenced by Skins. And like, if you look back on the pictures of Skins now, like you literally like look at their outfits and you're like, these used to be the coolest people on the planet. Like, what happened? Like, it's so funny how dated everything feels, even though it literally was just like not that long ago. And I'm still friends with loads of people I went to school with, and friends have always been really important to me, even though we all have really different lives now. But yeah, that's what it kind of reminds me of.
Did the constant kind of partying, did it ever take its toll?
Yeah, I think when I was a teenager, no. But like when I was about, I think after turning about 19, I started to get a little bit out of control. And it was a different sort of fun. It wasn't this kind of naive being super excited about the world. It was more of a like, oh, let's like go listen to techno and house in a really dark room and then stay up for 3 days.
So going back to the poetry, you kind of, one of the things that really put you on the map was the when you were talking about abortion, you got a lot of positive praise, but in equal measure, you got quite a lot of negative.
Yeah.
It was a bit of, I don't know if it's fair to say backlash, but.
It was pretty, it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it like, first of all, being in that? And then what does it feel like looking back on it?
Yeah. So it actually brings us on really well to the next song as
well. That's
good. It felt like something I was really keen to do, but looking back, I wonder if I was totally sure that I knew what I was getting myself in for. And I think something that I've definitely had to learn through poetry is, you know, within my work, is to really start questioning what the cost is. And not to exploit your own experience, because I think I've often fallen into the trap of just wanting to say it all and actually not thinking about how much damage that could do to me and my family, or, you know, what that's going to look like. And I think She Was a She really did that. But it is still the poem that I get messages about from all over the world all the time, from girls telling me that it's been really helpful for them, and that has outlived the backlash, which I think is really important to remember. I don't really do the poem anymore because I feel like my opinions have slightly shifted, or not my opinions, like I still definitely feel like everyone should have access, free access to abortions, but I definitely think like it was simplistic in the way that it, not simplistic, but I think when you write something, the really interesting thing about writing is that when you write something, it becomes permanent, when you're never permanent. So even though 3 months later, you might have written a completely different poem, that is the poem that it is. So in lots of ways, I'm just a different person now, but I still like to honour that it was really important for lots of people and very important for me. That's it.
And so Bon Iver,
yeah,
why does it bring you so well onto this song?
So Bon Iver were a band that I just really liked, like that when that first album came out, it was definitely just, I loved it. But I went to see them the day after I had an abortion, and then my dad died the next day. So I had this like full on weekend, and I was so heartbroken as well. I was like, I think the heartbreak was like the cherry on the top. And then my dog died as well. That was also what happened that week. It was just like a whole lot of things at once. And the song, I think something quite interesting about his lyrics is that they're never explicit. They never are very clear about what he's talking about. But for some reason, that means that they can fit into loads of different situations.
Then the snow started falling. We were stuck out in your car. You were rubbing both my hands, chewing on a candy bar. You said ink is just like the present, to be showing up like this. There's a moon when you crest. We start.
So with Blood Bank, you know, I'm not actually sure what the song's about, but there's something about the swell of it that just makes me feel lots of different emotions. It makes me feel comforted and also very upset at the same time. And, you know, there's a lyric in it that's like, isn't this just like the present to be showing up like this? And I think that that's just so beautiful, this idea of like, you know, we just have to take what happens when we're faced with it. And yeah, this song, it's so funny, this song, you know, when it comes on shuffle, it'll come on shuffle when I need it to come on shuffle. It's like such a strange, it just like comes back to me all the time. And sometimes I don't want to face it, and then other times I do. But I have the vinyl on, I've never had a vinyl player, but I have the vinyl on my wall, and I got it like that weekend.
Was there any other songs that you kind of sought solace in around that time that you perhaps haven't linked to?
No, but there are songs from that time that give me the total fear. Like, I can't listen to it. There's right. a song called Gabriel. I don't know who it's by, actually. It's like a remix. And there's another song called by Jeremy Joshua called Thinking About Your Body or something. But and also any of Subtract, like I can't listen to, because what happened after that weekend is that I was going out all the time and I was listening to these songs all the time, and now when I hear them they give me the fear. Like if the radio, it's on the radio, I have to turn it off. Like, it just gives me the fear, just because it was on repeat. They were all on repeat. But I don't know about finding solace. I mean, I think the song that'll come on next might help with that. But I definitely started listening to, kind of a few years later, I started listening to a lot of disco and a lot of really upbeat kind of fun tunes. And the next one is like one of those ones.
Before we get on to that, I want to talk about more about what you've got quite the CV. I mean, you're... You're like Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
So let's...
It's the hustle.
Yeah, it is. The life of a freelance creative. So where are you? Where have you been over the last few years? Okay. What have you been doing?
So I graduated in 2013. And then I worked in Soba for a year, which was some of the best times of my life. And then I decided I was going to move to Japan. So I did 2 winters in Japan teaching skiing. And then I did a winter in New Zealand teaching skiing. And then I came home and I was like, right, let's make a go at this poetry stuff. And I started, that was like 2016, I came home. And it's just been like nonstop working since then, facilitating, teaching, writing, making shows, fringes. It's been great.
What's been, like, I'm going to put you on the spot. What's been one moment over the last, out of all of those things that you've done, that you've kind of just stood and said, I am so happy doing this?
Yeah. Oh. I think the time that sticks out for me, now let me just try and get my timings right. I think it was the first time I did, was it Belladrum or Wicker Man? I think it was Wicker Man in 2014. And I got booked to do like a long poetry set. So it was like 40 minutes or something. And I just loved it. I came off stage and I was like, this is what I want to do. I was like, love this. This is really cool. That moment really sticks out. But there has been so many amazing moments. Like, I've performed at the Royal Albert Hall, the Roundhouse, the Fringe, Summer Hall. I've done the Prague Fringe. It's been, you know, I'm so lucky to be able to do what I do. And I don't take it for granted, because I know that I have had, you know, I've had a good support system. I've had, you know, come from a middle class family. And even though I've had, you know, my fair amount of trauma and all this stuff, I always had a safety net. And I think that if I hadn't had that safety net, I wouldn't have been where I am now. And I definitely wouldn't have been able to make work. And I see it a lot with my contemporaries that, like, they want to make work, but they just can't get in a place because of, you know, money and situations. So I don't take it for granted. And one of the things that I always try to do is I always try and like lift people up as well. And I don't mean that in a like creating them. Do you know what I mean? I mean that more that like, you know, there's plenty of room. So like it's actually fine for me just to shuffle over. And I think that that's always been something that allows me to do it, because then I don't feel like I'm not allowed to, because I'm definitely trying to help, because it's my job as well, like teaching. I just think everyone should have a creative output, and everyone, and I'm just so lucky I get to do it as a job.
The one of the things that you probably identify with as well in terms of arts and stuff is that you are, it's kind of your multi-skills and you're doing so many things. And I mean, how do you keep disciplined within that, within your time and yourself, and how do you keep yourself motivated?
So I go through phases. Like I had quite a tough year last year. The Fringe really took it out of me. And it was very quiet. And when it's quiet, you think you'll never work again. So you go into this kind of, this place of like, you know, it's very easy to slip into depression. But it helps for me to stay busy. I live by myself out by the sea, so that helps as well. Definitely, you know, limiting your drinking helps, and partying, and you know that these are all things that I have, you know, had to learn. And also working on poems to give them really a lot of space, to give all your creative stuff lots of space. Like there's poems that I'm bringing out now that, you know, were written 3 or 4 years ago that I couldn't have performed 3 or 4 years ago. And also just like always checking in. I also go to therapy. I think therapy is really important. And yeah, that's how I try and do it. I'm not very good at it. I fail all the time. You know, I'll be having dinner at 10 o'clock and then be up until 1. And then last week I went to go see Parasite, even though I had 25 poems to edit, and then had to be up at 5:30 to work in Edinburgh the next day in 3 different schools. So I slept in my car.
But was it worth it?
That's like for a different podcast. I liked it, but I think the hype ruins films sometimes.
Yeah.
I love films. I've been writing films for the last couple of years as well, like professional development. Nothing's been made yet. But yeah, like for me, I just felt like I was promised one thing by the trailer and I was shown another thing.
Right.
But that's being said, it's a wonderful film and it's very well made.
So talking about uplifting, Curtis Mayfield, Move On Up. I mean, this is obviously, I kind of often am staggered when people say that they haven't heard this song before.
Yeah.
And I just look at them as if they're...
Who's ever said that?
I've had one or two.
What?
Yeah, they've usually been a bit younger.
Have you not seen Bend It Like Beckham?
No. Well, oh yeah, I forget about that actually. Yeah. What film that was.
I mean, the worst part of that film, like I've watched this film quite recently, but the worst part is when, you know, somebody's like been terribly racist to her on the football field, and then she goes like, "You'll never understand," and he goes, "Of course I'll understand, I'm Irish." And you're like, not the same thing.
Exactly.
Not the same thing. Very dated. But apart from that, it is a pretty class film.
It is. Keira Knightley in a role that, yeah.
Yeah, that actually quite suited her.
It did. Yeah. It did. Yeah, so why this song?
So there's so many reasons for this song. I think first and foremost, I think it's my favourite song. I love this song. I think it should be everyone's alarm when they wake up in the morning. I think the world would be a happier place. But I went to this like amazing theatre show with my mum in New York, and it was 24 hours long. It was by an artist called Taylor Mack. And what he did is like every hour of the 24 hours was a different decade of music. So he started right back from when America was first discovered by the English, and he went from that point. But before that, he had this amazing like Native American ceremony. So he wanted to explore all the music. And while he was doing it, everything would have a different theme. and or different like acts, and he had burlesque dancers with him, and it was 24 hours long. We got a bursary to go because we were desperate to go, and we, you know, you get your dinner and everything there, and there's like hundreds of people, and it's in a big warehouse, and it was just incredible. But at 6 a.m, we're all just like knackered. We'd been up, you know, for however long. I think it started at like 4 p.m. I can't really remember, but we just had breakfast and everyone was just like tired, and we just done the 50s and the war and all that. And then the 60s happened, and he got like 150-piece brass band from Brooklyn kids to come in and play Move On Up.
Just move on up toward your destination.
Everyone was on their chairs dancing, and it was just like, it was just the most, and all these kids had no idea what they were doing because they'd obviously just been invited in, but it was just incredible, and it was a really special thing to share with my mum. And also it's just such a fun song, and you know, over since working in Soba, and I had an ex-boyfriend who only played disco music, so I've always just been into like Sister Sledge, Chic, Nile Rodgers, and just like upbeat music. I think it's just that you can dance all night to. That's what this song is to me.
So you talk about sharing a special moment with your mum. What music has she brought any music into your life that you kind of still listen to?
Yeah,
now?
So she loves music, and when we were, it was just me and her growing up, so we had quite a tense relationship, but you know, we could agree on a few albums, and we used to go to Ireland all the time when we were growing up, so there would be, we'd be on long drives, and we had Shania Twain, we had Dolly Parton, we had Eva Cassidy. Would like Eva Cassidy. We had the soundtrack to Brother We're Out Though, so random, but love all the tracks on that. Abba Gold, love that, and Norah Jones. Those were the ones that we could agree on.
And obviously, your dad's passed, yeah. But what were some of the, have you got any fond memories about the music that he listened to?
So dad wasn't really into music. He was into like buying CDs that had all types. So he would have like, you know, the best Motown CDs, and it would just have like everyone on it. He used to sing this song, which was By the Light of the Silvery Moon. I don't know if you know it.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, he used to sing, like, because he was a bit older, so he was like 63 when he died, so he was born in 48, so he liked quite like old school music. But you know, there was nothing, I didn't ever feel like we bonded over music. Music wasn't his real thing. But we played Fleetwood Mac, Landslide at his funeral, and right. Also To All the Girls I've Loved Before by Willie Nelson, because he loved a lot of women. We played that as kind of a little joke. There was a lot of exes at the funeral, so we had to nod to it anyway.
Yeah. So Amy Winehouse, obviously a phenomenal performer, quite a sad tale, but the legacy that she's left is just unbelievable. So you'd changed your mind with the songs with Amy. Was there just too many
There was too many, and also I kept on being like, why am I picking her? Like, I couldn't quite figure it out, because it's not like, her music has been part of my life. I've listened to it for a long time, but I think more than anything, I just think as an artist, like, I have so much respect for her. And I see similarities in the way that we approach how we write. And there's struggles that we've had similar. I feel like Amy was all about love. Like, she was all about just like where she can get the next bit of love from. And I feel like that is something that I've kind of, you know, struggled with, always trying to find, you know, acceptance through others' eyes. But she also just had this like beautiful knack for writing like these songs that just had to be the truth. She could never not tell this truth. And I think that that's something really amazing, and obviously something that got her into a lot of trouble as well. But I was in Camden when she died. I was living in London working at Fabric, the nightclub, for a summer. And we were in Camden when she died, and we went up to the vigil and we were pissed, obviously, and I ended up getting in the sun. People were taking photos of us because we were, I mean, it was a riot, but it was like she's just like, I don't know, it was just so sad when she died. And I think that she writes heartbreak in such a beautiful way.
And is that what this song represents for you?
Well, I always liked Frank a lot, the album. And that was an album that I was listening to as a teenager. And I know that it was one of the albums that she hated. She couldn't even listen to it anymore. And that's kind of how I feel sometimes about things that I've written. Yeah, I kept going back and forward. And what I love about Back to Black is that it's something... I love when good pop music is about sad things, but make them uplifting, that make us happy, that we feel all these things and we feel all these emotions, like Robin, Dancing on Your Own. Like, that is one of like the prime examples of that. And when all these people do their covers and they just make them really sad, like they're missing the point.
Yeah.
And for me, like Back to Black did that really well. I think that like all the songs are so heartbreaking because you can listen to them a cappella and you can hear how hard she was finding it. But then Mark Ronson's managed to do this thing where he's managed to make it uplifting, and then everyone is listening to them. So I'm not as into you as I appear to be. But I think something about Frank, I think something about the way that she writes these relationships that just speak to me. And that's why I've... then what is the line? It's like, then you brought me downstairs with a Marlboro Red. I just think that that's... I don't know. I just love that line. I love that song.
Yeah. You've got... so you've been doing this show for the last... Is it fair to say a year?
Yeah, so I did my first show in March last year, but I was developing it in January, so yeah.
So tell us about that show.
So Daddy Drag has been my most recent show, and it's a drag show. It's got no poetry in it, but it's me as a drag act as my dad, and my mum narrates the show, talking about her relationship to dad, and it kind of becomes this kind of grotesque celebration and also funeral for dad. And it's on at the Tron in a few weeks. It'll be next week. It's on from the 24th to the 29th. And yeah, it did really well at the Fringe. It won the Autopsy Award, which was cool, which from Summer Hall, which celebrates solo female artists making groundbreaking work. So apparently it's that. So yeah, you should definitely come. There's lots of tenants, lots of dancing, lots of like burping and farting and lots of funny times.
How did your mum react to it?
So me and mum went on a bit of a journey with it. Originally, she didn't want it to be made, and then I interviewed her about all the subjects, and she did that willingly. And then she had to come into the rehearsal rooms and say what she was happy going in and what wasn't. But she has been really supportive, and a lot of people wouldn't. And it was it happened quite naturally, but I think it was quite a big deal for all of us.
Have other members of your family seen it, and how have they reacted?
No one else has actually seen it. Not many people that knew dad have seen it. But it gets to a point where This is when it gets really complicated, when you're making work that is personal, because there has to be a point where it becomes about the craft.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people that would come see it would be like, oh, maybe that's not what I would do. Like, mum was like, he wouldn't be wearing Y fronts and a vest, he'd be wearing pajamas. And you know, that's when you start to be like, okay, well, maybe it's not dad, maybe it's me if I was a dad. Or there's all these like blurred lines where you're not sure. But I think however it's read, you'll get something from it. But I think the people that knew dad find it the most difficult, because they see the gaps in it. But there's only so much you can do in an hour show. I think we'd need to make a bloody opera if we wanted to tell the whole story. But that's been like also a lesson about how to decide what to put into things to make audiences, you know, be able to go on the journey with you.
Do you feel like it's been cathartic, and do you feel that it's kind of almost kind of contributed to a change in the relationship with your mum at all?
I feel like it doesn't feel cathartic. I think it feels harder than anything, but that's the cost, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like, it makes me feel like I need more therapy. It doesn't make me feel like it is therapy. And I think sometimes women sometimes get set, their stuff gets called, is like referred to as like therapy or confessional and all these kind of things, when a man wouldn't necessarily, because it's deep rooted in shame that you shouldn't be telling these things. So I actually don't know the answer. I feel like I just get a calling to make something, and the title always comes first. Like, if the title is there, I feel like I have to make a show about it. And Daddy Drag, the title came before anything else. And I went on this exploration, and, you know, it's not a perfect show. And my relationship to my mum, you know, probably suffered a bit from it as well. And maybe it got better in different ways. It's quite hard to tell. And maybe I can't really speak about it just now, because I probably feel like I'm still quite in it.
Yeah.
And actually I might need a few months to think about it. But I definitely know that doing it for the Fringe, I was not in a good way afterwards. I felt like I was reliving trauma every night. And I think going forward, I need to find a way of, how do you expose the truth, or how do you offer the truth while still protecting yourself? And Brené Brown, I don't know if you know Brené Brown, she's like this amazing, she's actually a data collector, but she collects data about shame. She's amazing. But she talks about these vulnerability hangovers. She talks about like you the next day when you've been really vulnerable, how you can have this feeling like it's a hangover, like you're like, oh my god, I can't believe I've said that. And you know, this, like, you get the fear about being vulnerable. And I feel like Daddy Drag was that for me. And every time I share some, I mean, I just recorded a live album, and I did it in front of like I did it at the Hug and Pint, and there was like loads of people there. And the next day, like, I hadn't been drinking, but I felt like I'd been sinful. Like, it's this feeling where you're like, you feel like super exposed. And I think that Daddy Drag hasn't felt like it's cathartic, mm-hmm. which is quite interesting.
I think it's really fascinating what you're saying about getting to a point and separating the personal aspect mm-hmm. from the craft. And I think I assume that a lot of people can relate to that are doing performance yeah. and so on. You said that there's some music that's part of
yeah.
the Daddy Drag as well. So what are some of the songs?
So you've got Papa Loves Mambo by Perry Cosmo.
Yeah.
And he was apparently act that Dad really liked. I mean, I didn't know this, but Mum said that was one of her influences that came through. Then we've got My Girl by The Temptations, which is actually came from Father of the Bride. Like, I'd never seen that film with Steve Martin, but I did that, like, when I was developing it, I did this whole thing being like, oh, we should all be dads like Steve Martin. And that's where that song came from. And it's also part of like a wedding speech as well. So it's very, like, there's lots of different phases within the show. Like, we go fishing, we have a barbecue, we go to a wedding. dad areas. And also to end, we have Bob Dylan, Don't Think Twice, It's All Right. And I think that that song is just about letting go, actually.
Well, it ain't no use to sit and wonder why, baby, even you don't know by now. And it ain't no use to sit and wonder why, baby, it'll never do somehow. When your rooster crows at the break of dawn, look out your window and I'll be gone. You're the reason I'm a-traveling on, but don't think twice, it's all right.
Something, I mean, if you've seen the show, you know why that's at the end, but it was kind of this understanding that you could never fit a person in a show,
mm-hmm.
and actually how you just have to let go of, you know, your expectations of that person or your memories of that person and or any sort of grudgement you hold towards them. And I think also Still Game then ended their season with that song.
Yeah,
I was raging. I was like, what are the chances? Like, what are the actual chances? But I think that songs come in and out of fashion, so that's what I'm giving it to. But I'm hoping that no one puts, I can't believe I've just said this on the podcast because everyone's going to notice now.
I don't know. I think it depends on the context of yeah. what you're doing as well. These go so quick. We're coming up to your final
yeah.
pick, and someone that I don't know.
Which oh, really?
I love. Oh, I fab. Love when I don't know people and songs
yeah.
On these picks. So Rura
yeah.
And the Low Ground.
Yeah.
So educate me.
Okay, so Rura are like a traditional Scottish band. So Adam Holmes used to sing with them, but now they just kind of do their own.
Is that Adam Holmes from Adam Holmes and the Embers?
Yeah, like the Scottish Adam yeah. Holmes. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so they are like traditional Scottish music, and like my family are like super Irish. My dad was Irish. My mum now spends half her time in a house in Donegal. She lives there now. And my mum and her friends, who were my friend's parents, were in this like traditional Irish band. Mum plays the penny whistle. I mean, they were terrible. They only like knew five songs. Some of them were like actually amazing musicians, but they used to take us to this festival every year in County Clare called the Willie Clancy Week. And Irish people call it the Willie Week, which is really funny. But it's like this festival where all the pubs are open really late, and like all the best musicians, folk and traditional music musicians from all over the world come, and they just jam together, and there's lessons all day. And we used to just hate the traditional music. We just used to be like, shut up, like slamming doors, like hate it. But there's something about the last couple of years that I've started to like fall in love with it, and but also have my own taste in it. And I think Rura, because they're like a fresh band, they're like recent, they're someone that I really love, and they remind me of my partner who I've been with for a while now. One of our very first dates, we went to Celtic Connections, and we went to the festival club afterwards, and Rura were playing, and it was just like the best fun. But this song reminds me of Donegal, where my mum is, where my family are from, and just those long car journeys, and it just makes me feel all the emotions.
You we're coming up to the end.
Yeah.
What are your kind of your hopes for the next few years? What do you want to do? What do you, if you've got any pipe dreams, I mean, what are they?
So I'm just finishing a collection of books. Well, not books, of a book that I'm sure will be published quite soon. I mean, it's taken me so long to write it, which is so funny because you always are really worried about it, and then when it's meant to happen, it just feels so easy, and it's all just come together, and all the poems that I thought were rubbish for years have all, you know, found their kind of home in it. And so that's going to be happening. I think I want to keep developing writing films. I'm really enjoying that. And yeah, I'm just trying to figure out how to be an artist and also be happy. Cause I think it's really hard, and like how you can, you know, you don't have to be upset all the time to make good work, and how that works. And you know, I'd really like to get a dog in the next few years.
You're the second person that's told me that this week.
I'd like to go travelling more. I'd like to study again. There's lots of things I'd like to do. But yeah, and that's it.
So remind
that's loads
us,
of things.
That
I don't
is,
know why
is
I've
loads.
Seen.
So remind us when your show is.
It's the 26th. 6th of February to the 29th of February at the Tron. It's at 8 o'clock. So yeah, come along, it should be good.
And we will put the links in to on our website as well.
I've also got this album, this live album that will be coming out at some point as well.
So before, like, yeah. I just wanted to talk about that when so what is this live album?
Okay, so it's called Archive Live, and the idea of it behind it is that I wanted to, I feel like all my videos are quite old now, and, you know, I've been writing so much but not really had the opportunity to do like a full long set. And like when you're just doing, poets always get booked for like short sets, so they get like 20 minutes, 30 minutes. So you just do your greatest hits really, because you're usually doing it in front of, well, music fans or in schools or wherever you're doing it, and actually you don't get time to really delve into like the quieter stuff or the stuff that just doesn't fit. And like when you're just doing a random set and you have to convince people to be engaged, whereas this like was, people were invited to know that I was going to do like an hour long set, and I was going to do old poems and new poems, and the whole idea of archiving, like how do we archive our work, how do we honor what we've done in the past but still look towards the future. And I think as a poet it's quite hard to do that, and I could have done it in a recording studio, but that's not what I do. I don't speak in a recording studio. I wanted to do it in a live audience, so you had the mistakes, you had the laughter, you had the coughing, you know, you had the like me saying stupid things in between. So that's what I've done, and I invited like loads of really good poet pals to come and perform alongside me. So it was a really special night. We sold out like really fast, and it was just like a moment of being, it was like a checking in moment of being like, oh, I'm doing the right thing. This is actually a career moment to take note of all that I've made, and like how many people are interested and all that kind of thing. So that's what it was about. And also a way of people accessing more of my newer stuff. So I'll be putting it on Spotify, and so people can access it.
So have you got a plan of when you're going to release that?
So we have all the tracks. I just need to figure out, I just need like a spare minute. Like I was just saying to you, I've not had a day off.
Yeah.
But it won't be long. It'll probably be before Easter anyway.
Thank you so much.
No worries, thanks for having me.
It's been great chatting, and it's really refreshing for me to have songs that
aren't cool.
Well, I hate that word cool now. I think it's irrelevant, but songs that I like it when people are true about what has actually they've grown up with, as opposed to trying to impress the audience. So
I don't even know, like there's obviously some music now that I'd be like, yeah, like I'm listening to like a bit of No Name, Kendrick Lamar, like I could drop those names. I just did, don't know if you know it.
Yeah.
But I don't think that would, I think people could see through that. Like, I'm Shania through and through.
Yeah. No one will take that away from you. Thank you so
much. Thank you so much.
And I wish you all the best going forward.
See you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.